Welcome to Dominate for Two, a War Machine and Hordes podcast.
I'm Alex.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Benjamin.
And today we're going to be talking about metagame analysis and pair building. So a lot of the time I'm spending outside of actually playing the game, I'm trying to figure out how to build a pair that all take tournaments, that can solve common lists, and ideally have at least a game into everything that I'm likely going to play. And so some people do it by just picking out what are the common lists that you're going to see. Ghost Fleet, back in the day, Wormwood, or Tuna before she got nerfed, Fianna in her heyday before Oracle's nerf, etc.
Cephalux.
I think it's an interesting way to do it, and maybe it's sometimes more helpful in certain metas than others, but clumping lists together by properties like Weapon Master Spam, Recursion, Gun Lines, Assassination, etc.
Okay, so like getting a sense of the common builds or things you might have to answer, and then looking and identifying, okay, what do I need to be covering? Am I covering that sufficiently? Where are my holes? What do I need to be prepared to deal with?
Yeah, the idea being that if you're trying to cover the eccentricities of the powerful lists of every single faction, it's not going to work out well for you. And I think especially now that themes are more prevalent, warcasters in certain factions get put into more homogenous shells. Dark Host is going to take roughly the same models with most warcasters, regardless of who it is.
Right. You're going to see Bane Riders as the big contingent or a bunch of the small based guys.
And a Wraith Engine or two, maybe some Stalkers, it really depends.
Yeah, but, if it's Lich 2, probably no Wraith Engines, but bigger.
I've still seen one Wraith Engine with him, but I mean, It's to taste.
Well, how about we start off with some of the big things in the metagame right now and see if we can bring those down to categories and identify them.
Okay, shoot.
Well, so, I mean, Krix is a big place to start, because they're really, really powerful. Their theme forces have gotten a lot stronger, and their casters remain natively strong and actually have an outlet for their toolkit. So Dark Host is relatively homogenous. You have either very hard to kill cavalry and or a large presence of weapon master or hard hitting warrior models backed up by a battle engine. You've typically got casters with some kind of damage buff, support utility, and delivery mechanism. So the army gets there typically unfazed, and you're dealing with a swarm of melee troops. Ghost Fleet, post-CID, who knows where that's going to land, but heavy recursion, prominent presence of battle engines, and generally requiring specialized tools to deal with. Also reasonably elite shooting that you can't hide from. Satixis Raiders are kind of like Banes, except significantly faster. And you've just got a bunch of premium troops who don't die on the approach and do a lot of damage when they get there. So I think that's like looking at Krix, the things that I see that are strong right now. How CID will come down on Ghost Fleet and whether it will remain relevant remains to be seen. But I think the biggest strengths of the theme remain unaddressed, and it just got a narrower matchup profile in losing point blank in the last couple iterations. I mean, what else do you guys see that's big right now or is like really important to address in terms of specific lists?
Not faction specific, but one thing I've been noticing is a big problem with some of the builds is having access to magic weapons. Because I've noticed, and this is a thing that does play into Ghost Fleet's strengths as well, but there's plenty of other casters, plenty of other factions that have things that require magic weapons to get past their defenses. And there's some builds with certain factions that are way more optimal if you just sort of triple down on a thing. And, you know, like if you're doing a hard armor skew with Cawdor, or you're doing some other builds, and then you realize you can't hurt a bunch of things that you need to be hurting. And so then you have to start making decisions like, how do I get magic weapon? you know, what am I sacrificing to gain the thing that's going to grant magic weapon? And is it enough to swing those key matchup points? And I noticed that some factions have very easy access to magic weapon, which is just sort of part of their build. You know, like if you're playing Signar, you rarely give much thought to it because you look around and you're like, I got tons of options. You know, Cawdor specifically is suffering a lot right now from not having easy access to magic weapon. You know, they have the same answer basically every time, which is to take, you know, a merc unit that hands out magic weapon and hope that's enough.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you get the objective too.
And maybe. But it's hard for some of those factions to really, you know, and I know that like with the minions builds, a lot of times you're sacrificing something just to, I mean, you have the tools to do it, but you're putting in these tools just because you have to have it around on the off chance you really need it.
Right. So that's dealing with like Protectorate and Ghost Fleet and Wraith Engines.
Right.
I mean, yeah, Wraith Engines are the biggest incorporeal problem, but.
So something I've been noticing recently, and maybe this is just local stuff, but I'm noticing there's kind of a rise in a family of hard-hitting troops that are very resilient to shooting. So you've got Dark Host, you've got Satixis, you've got recursion plans that don't really care about the poke of guns, like Testament or Ghost Fleet, if it's still intact after the CID nerfs.
Masters of War is another good example because you're shooting hard targets and they get to just slough off a large percentage of the damage, so you're probably not going to inflict meaningful casualties at range.
And one of the newest kids on the block, since I've got to rep my trolls, is the Northkin theme. If people haven't played against it yet, it's a bunch of really hard-hitting troops, and the golden goose of that entire theme, in my opinion, is the Northkin bears. They hit like trucks, and they have prowl for whatever reason. So if you, and Pathfinder. So you can just stick them wherever they're getting concealment, and they're just straight-up stealth. And they're heavy killers that out-threat pretty much any common heavy. Mm-hmm. With no assistance. They're speed 7, 1-inch melee.
Yeah, so they're 11 inches dangerous.
Yeah. 12 if you don't need the damage buff and can do speed instead.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so that's... I think that would be a first class that we can point to is Dark Host, Satixis, and anything that falls into the territory of hard-hitting troops that get delivered somehow and you just take them in bulk.
Yeah.
What about Signar? Because they're kind of... You know, looking back at the WTC, looking back at large events over the last 4 months, Signar has been showing up in force. And I think a lot of that has to do with their battle engine. So, and you know, you've got the Stormstrider 1 or 2. You've got a couple of high-powered shots. Like, it's a platform with big-powered shots, and it's easy to add in a couple more high-powered shots and start removing pieces at range very, very quickly. And then... You know, due to theme force benefits, either in Storm Division or Heavy Metal, you have enough incidental models that scenario is not a problem. You're playing a principally defensive game to destroy all your opponent's pieces, but you just got this incredibly robust base of high-powered shooting. So that's something I see in Signar. Is anyone else doing that you guys can think of?
I mean, I know... I haven't been playing into it, but I know that there's some of the Scorn builds that have really focused on shooting, which people are...
Sheth, Winds of Death.
Yeah, I mean, because... I mean, I remember testing out one of those lists as a proxy thing, and it felt really good, but obviously I was very inexperienced with running both the models and the list, but it seemed quite strong, and I can imagine that a player who was practiced at it would run that very well. The Scorn had the advantage... over Signar in the sense that they still had a meaty center, which Signar is oftentimes missing from their high-value shooting, which was interesting because you could still take the contact and be like, oh, no, I'm fine here. Like, I can still beat my way through a lot of this. And I've heard that the new caster has some interesting potential. I haven't played into him yet, but I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do.
Tekrid always has Krios in their back pocket. He played because he was in the ADR cycle last... rotation, or I guess the current one still. So you would see him with either Testament or Amon, depending on how the player was feeling. Lots of quality guns at range.
Yeah, and I'm actually honestly surprised I don't see more Menos shooting, because they're shockingly effective in a lot of matchups. And I find it weird that they don't seem to be leveraging that as much.
Testament also fits into the shooting resilient, hard-hitting melee troops that just get there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first X percentage you kill don't count.
Yep. Yeah. I'm not going to lie, that's very frustrating to handle.
Mm-hmm.
So, in my opinion, part of the problem with Protectorate Gunlines right now is that they've historically been combined arms when you put them on the table, like Sevi 1, Fiora 2, and Mark 2. And there's no real theme that appropriately supports a combined arms Protectorate Gunline.
Yeah, I can see that, actually.
So, like, because you want to be taking, like, a 20-point unit, and that probably means you aren't maxing out on freebies, so it doesn't always feel super great. Theoretically, I guess you could do it in Creator's Might and take Idrian's as your Merc unit. But then you're losing out on Ion and Holt, and I don't know.
Okay, so we got the hardcore shooting, which exists largely in Signar, and the melee troops. What about melee heavy armies? I know a lot of people in Kador are still playing very large efficiency jack armies, but those don't seem to me to be quite as good as the premium heavy long range threat armies like Doomshaper 2, Child or Dreamer, and those kind of verge more toward a combined arms force. Armies that will typically get the drop on another battle group and inflict a lot of damage right out of the gate.
I think the problem right now with the large Kador heavy blocks is that they incentivize like mid-level play wins, but fall apart really heavily into the higher-end game. Because the armor skew seems really hard to get past, but your higher-level opponents will simply ignore a lot of it because it doesn't matter. Like, they can stall it out and then just either get in and kill your caster, or they brought a bunch of weapon master infantry and just kill it. And your offensive ability with those lists is a lot lower into those kind of builds.
Yeah, I feel like between gun lines and the shooting resilient weapon master lists, if you're going to be taking a brick right now, you have to be able to shit stomp one of the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Kador really struggles because your threat range in most of the theme forces maxes out at 10 inches.
Right.
Which is a giant problem.
And the problem is that Kador brick was relying on asking the question, can you remove this much crap before, you know, I went on scenario or the timer hits?
And the answer is frequently yes.
Yeah, especially now that people are incentivized to play armies that actually just do that. Like, you know, you look at Dark Host and, you know, you just sort of chuckle to yourself if you see a build like that. You're like, okay. Like, I need low averages and your army is gone, you know, and you're not even stopping me on the approach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, any of the TK or control casters just sort of chuckling at that as well, because none of those pieces are particularly threatening to them. And they just aren't moving around and get to the juicy center.
Right. So I don't think the Kador brick is particularly good right now. I have had largely negative experiences playing it, but I do think there's a similar list type which is showing up right now that is like it but much more effective. So like Doomshaper 2, Fiana 2, or Abby 2, running those quicker heavies that will get into you very fast and remove a lot of pieces and then just trade down.
It all comes down to the whole alpha thing. I mean, that's why trolls have always had the advantage into that matchup with Kador, is that they always get the distance. And it's the same thing that Abby 2 is bringing to her battle group, is that she allows them to alpha and get all the damage in when it matters. Whereas Kador right now, and Scorn has the same problem with their beast bricks, they never get the alpha off unless you're running the Derp Turtles,
mm-hmm.
which leaves you in a bad place because you can't in the current meta suck up heavies landing on you.
With Turtles?
I mean, with other heavies. Like, you know, if people are dropping heavies into your heavies with the alpha, you tend to just lose your heavies now. You used to be able to sort of suck it up for a turn, mm-hmm. but now it seems like that's not a viable strategy. So if you're building a big brick, you're just losing beasts and you're not getting anything for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of the battle groups thrived before all the factions had access to armor cracking infantry themes. And as people are starting to play those more and more, the bricks are kind of starting to get brought back in line. Because before, if you were just resilient to whatever, like, Kane 3 or Nemo 3 gun line or something along that lines, that your opponent would bring, you could comfortably drop that into a lot of stuff. And that's very rapidly becoming less the case unless you're able to triage slash poke with your brick into Weapon Masters, which not a lot of lists can do.
Right, yeah, because that usually requires some degree of control or strong utility to keep, to send in an expensive piece, get 4 to 5 warrior models, and then keep the rest from killing you, which is not easy for casters without that toolkit. Actually, jumping off that, I know we mentioned TK and control. Something like really unique about control is its like and control abilities is its ability to shift an army that would otherwise not be viable into something that's working. So, like, are you guys seeing anything like that? Control armies that are based on some form of heavy control tend to be uncharacteristic and not like other common paradigms. Can you guys think of anything that you're seeing?
So I've been mucking around with Kolgrima a little bit, and the Cloud Wall is better than I would have thought. And I think that's in part due to the fact that you're seeing a lot of Weapon Master spam, because Weapon Master spam, unlike bricks or some of the more resilient gun lines, really can't handle. So, for example, if you're playing a brick, you can just trample through the Cloud Wall. If you're playing a gun line, you probably have access to Eyeless Sight or True Sight somewhere in a lot of cases, or some way of indirect firing through the Cloud Wall. But if you've just got a bunch of efficient punch-up guys, you can walk up, poke them, and then you just put a Cloud Wall in front. And as long as you're outside of walk range, they're not really going to do that much to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm assuming that other factions can do similar things. I think Haley 3 in the Trencher theme is going to be a great eater of Weapon Master lists.
Yeah, I will second guns. That, because having been playing a lot of the new Trencher stuff just for giggles, I noticed that when Mark III first dropped, Trenchers were just flatly useless. Like, they just weren't worth their time, because especially the large beast bricks just didn't care, or the large jack bricks, this is what I was seeing. They would just, plow right on through, and then the Trenchers were valueless into that. But nowadays, taking 2 main units of Trenchers have been in the Trencher theme. I've been testing out Siege 2, and I was messing around with Kane 1 in a, skewed anti-infantry build. And the Trenchers were fantastic in that. Like, they kept me from getting charged. They kept things from being able to take all these opportunity attacks. And very few people actually had Eyeless Sight or anything else that was ignoring enough of the clouds to be valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know a lot of folks have been really liking Haley 3 in that Trencher theme.
Oh, like, she's super good.
Saying that stuff like it's one of the strongest lists in the game currently. And then looking around for kind of similar stuff, I have not seen classic control casters like Kruger 2 or Haley 2 really showing up. I think Sorsha 1, who's another great control caster, currently has almost no home in her own faction, so I haven't been playing her. But casters like Kolgrima, Haley 3 in the Trencher theme, and Zerkova 1 are things that, like, even if they're not the best, they're things that are around right now, and I think will probably persist in being around.
And so another element, since Weapon Master spam is coming back, is Rebuke. Casters with Rebuke are going to be a lot more valuable. Because
mm-hmm.
If you can just say that unit of Weapon Masters is functionally worthless, it's not on the table until I've triaged my way to it. Mm-hmm. It's huge. So I think you're going to see stuff like 72. I'm blanking on the others that have Rebuke right now.
Yeah, well, it is also, I will say it's also interesting that, what is the new solo's name? Elish?
Yeah.
He's been very interesting because he's usable, if I remember correctly, by everybody. And he has created some interesting thoughts now, because I see him in most competitive lists all of a sudden, because he's just such a useful toolbox. But it is one of those things where now you actually do have a little toolbox for stopping that stuff, which a lot of factions didn't have anything equivalent to that before.
I mean, stopping within certain tolerances of stop, but yeah.
Well, right, but I mean, you know, especially for factions that had literally nothing like that before, it's kind of like a nice bump to allow them to actually participate in that.
Right, like a defensive debuff remover.
Right. It's hard to pick out lists for like a larger event for the meta than it is to do a local meta. Because like the local meta, I obviously will know the players who are there. I have a pretty good guess at what they're bringing. You know, sometimes there's SKUs that are in the local meta that I would never see at a national event that I have to tech for, or, you know, I just lose and feel sad about myself and go home and cry a lot. A lot of times a national meta or the larger scale meta is very weird when you show up and you see things that you just never see. And if you didn't tech for them, you know, you basically have to make a pair that you feel you can play effectively into most matchups, regardless of whether they're right drops. Because a lot of times just playing well with a pair will get you through a matchup that you weren't expecting. But, you know, I mean, it's a lot of difference between those two steps when you're making your plans.
Yeah.
And I know that that was like the I5 thing and, you know, looking at some of the big tournaments where you have the team events, that was one of the big kerfluffles is you just didn't know. You know, you could cover a bunch of matchups, but like, what if somebody brings this? What do you do?
National meta is like a box of chocolates.
Yeah, and sometimes you just get weird stuff, you know, because some people are better at sort of outguessing the meta than others and bring lists that actually end up winning into a bunch of things that you don't expect.
Well, like, let's go back through the process we used, because like the principal questions we asked are like, what are we seeing? What are we playing? What's actually being effective right now, and what are we like seeing consistently over where we play? I think you can take those questions and then apply them to a traveling metagame. Like if you are going to a number of regional conventions, say up and down the Pacific coast and like into the Southwest, you can over like 3 to 4 events, you can ask those same questions and start to get yourself into a place of metagame analysis where you're not getting blindsided. I think the one we didn't ask is, and which is relevant, is what's coming down the pike. What's actually, what do you think is going to be showing up in a big way that hasn't already?
I don't know. With all the CID stuff, especially when the final seems to be often different than what was in the testing cycle, it's hard to guess sometimes. Also, model availability seems to be an issue because some of the models are coming out at sequences that are different than what we expected. And sometimes the meta just doesn't catch up with anything for a while. You know, some people get really attached to a certain build, even if it becomes pretty second rate.
Right.
Because they had a lot of success with it at some point.
Yeah, and I had exactly that problem in my run-up to the WTC.
Yeah, and I'm certainly guilty of that. I've done that for years where, like, you have an army you're very comfortable with, and you're going to a tournament, and you're kind of like, well, I'm going to fall back on my old favorites because I know how to play this list. And then you kind of run into that wall where you're like, oh, yeah, right, I'm missing a couple of tools that I need to rework this list for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't think I've ever had any success trying to sort of meta guess the what the big events are going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I just tend to take lists, like if I'm being serious about trying to win it versus, you know, just taking stuff that I like to play, you know, I'll try to just take two lists that I think give me the best overall profile that I know I can run effectively in the time limits. Because my biggest problem historically has always been actually clocking myself, because I have lost a lot of games on clock that I was winning on the board. And so familiarity with the list is more important in a lot of those matchups to me than, you know, if I have the right answer for everything.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I'm not sure what's coming down the pipe, because I mean, we've just described like probably like the quote unquote rock, paper, scissors. Well, rock, paper, scissors doesn't really apply here because it's not like A beats C beats C beats A. Whatever
it is. Yeah, we get it. Everybody knows rock, paper, scissors.
individual lists have their own quirks, and they're going to have their own matchups. Like, it might be that you have a Jack Brick that beats the hell out of Weapon Masters but loses to Gunlines, or it might be the other way around. It really depends on the eccentricities of the list.
Right. And that's something I wanted to address by saying control casters make things weird, is because they can often flip that switch, and that's an eccentricity to watch for.
Yeah. But, so speaking as a Trolls player, I think Colgrima is going to enter into the top 10 most powerful casters in the game. Like, if you haven't seen her on the table, she is ludicrous. I've never played a caster this powerful in one of my primary factions before. I killed Gaston on a hill under his feet with Colgrima by herself, and then we re-racked, and I tabled him, and then killed him.
I presume you're referring to Gaston 2, the new Murder Master.
No, he got that fucking junior, killed him dead.
Yeah, I was just about to say that there's two very different numbers required to kill a 5-wound junior versus a real caster.
But the math on her spray, I'm not sure if you've seen that. It's a 2-cost spray 10, crit stationary, pal 12, goes up to a pal 14 under the new Creel Stone. So she can cast that 4 times, or she can go fishing for crit stationary if you're a high def.
Mm-hmm.
Warcaster Warlock.
As a Zirkova 2 player, I am very familiar with this math.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, except for me, the whole thing signs importance.
Oh, yeah, and it's cheaper.
Yes. And so, like, it does everything. Oh, you need to triage a heavy? Here, let me stationary it and blow it up with my bombers. Oh, I need to kill your caster? Here, let me stationary it. I've got puppet strings just in case that doesn't work. It's got, like, a... I did the math on this earlier. Like, if she just goes for 2 boosted sprays... with puppet strings on, she has like an 80% chance of stationarying a target if it like needs to be stationary. But even if you don't want to go for that game plan, you can kill so much stuff with that spray. Like, oh, you're playing into Weapon Master spam? Here, let me trample up Mulk, turn up his Animus, and let's go to town. It's just, it does everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, on top of that, she has a cloud wall if you think that's going to be more pertinent. Because, I mean, you don't have enough fury to do everything, so you're going to have to, like, make some kind of split here. She even has that 3-inch teleport for 1, so she can, like, she can get up there if Mulk dies or if you play her out of Power of Dunia. If you're willing to risk her, she can do work herself.
Mm-hmm.
Her feat is amazing. I think she might start to... Her in conjunction with how powerful the new Northkin stuff is, I think we might be returning to a troll meta of a different flavor where they weren't that great, and then oh god, like there's a couple of things that just weren't completely thought through, and now trolls are an obnoxious list to beat.
Yeah,
and I might be overestimating here, but. Those bears rip through everything. Colgrima rips through everything. I never had as easy of a time with Doomy 2 as I'm having with Colgrima and Madrak right now.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because I definitely get Colgrima coming down the pike as something that's going to be really powerful and really show up, and now that the models are out, it's becoming viable, and you know we've got tournament season starting again, and results will start to flow in. I think what I'd like to get to is like answering the third question of what's coming down the pike, like what's a methodology for that? And I think, I mean, it's hard to say, Ben, like you mentioned, because the CID stuff can vary or because model releases can be not quite right. But like generally, whatever is in CID seems to be the source of big shakeups pretty routinely.
What also, you know, people follow the new hotness. So if they have...
Right, so there's novelty-seeking.
Right, there's novelty-seeking, but there's also, in the CID, they produce some very obvious synergies. And if those obvious synergies are nested in a theme, the cost of not taking advantage of that becomes higher than the cost of the flexibility you have with something else. Mm-hmm. So it tends to reinforce itself in those cycles, which I think is a big part of, you know, the theme CID... power creep problems. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm still glad to see some of these models getting revisited and buffed up. But it is somewhat concerning on a level that, you know, if each new splash of these weird pseudo factions within factions start becoming the way they power up everybody. You know, you get this weird thing where I can't even keep track of what half the models are doing anymore because there's so many new models. Which leads to its own meta problem, because there may be things, and I know that we ran into this, you know, at the big events, whether there were themes that did things that we just didn't know they did. And so we didn't account for that in the matchup profile, where we're like, oh, that everyone gets takedown? Well, that's a fascinatingly useful ability that, you know, wasn't listed anywhere that we saw. You know, and there's things like that that can really kind of catch you out in combination with a good build. So, you know, then I just kind of default back to like, well, I need two lists that I know I can play effectively, and then just hope it's enough to get me through some of these.
Between the proliferation of takedown and the Satixis theme getting, it has RFP now, right?
In the last iteration, yeah.
So assuming it retains that, I think you're going to see recursion strategies start to fall away. So I think you're going to see, you're going to see a lot less of Ghost Fleet, because without the triple threat of Denny being scenario, attrition, assassination all at the same time, I don't think it's going to be an auto including Crick's pairs. And I think that a lot of their other options and their other themes are just more fun and interesting. So I think you'll see the bulk of players move on. Not that Ghost Fleet isn't good enough to hack it if you're playing to your strengths in it, but I think it isn't so head and shoulders above everything else post nerfs. And
which
with the meta being more recursion unfriendly, I think you're not going to see it nearly as much.
Okay. So the next thing like that you mentioned when we were planning out this episode is going into taking all these considerations. You've looked at the metagame, you've evaluated the common lists, like we see shooting resilient, hard-hitting infantry, semi-control based mixed clouds and high offense, hardcore shooting, fast hard-hitting battle groups, taking all that into consideration, like how do you go into designing a pair for this?
So I think the first way to build a pair is ideally your first list is going to be the list you're most comfortable with, and ideally it's going to be a question rather than an answer. You want something that's powerful in its own right, that's going to do its own thing, and you feel comfortable in the majority of matchups with it, because you've got your own game plan and you're just going to try and power through things. And then once you feel that you understand the list, you should be able to understand where it falls short, what type of matchups does it fail into weapon masters. So for example, Doomy 2. When I first came up with my Doomy 2 list, it was because it was the first set of themes, I believe, for LVO at that point. And I saw the Kador theme, I saw the Protectorate theme, I saw, Signar just had Storm Division back then, or did they have Heavy Mount? No, just Storm Division. I saw a lot of Jack themes, and I knew Jack Bricks were going to be a thing, I knew Tudor was going to be a thing, and I knew Wormwood was going to be a thing. And I knew that Doomy just took a steaming pile on Wormwood. I thought Agitation was funny into Tuna. And I knew that being faster than every other Jackbrick would beat that. And then at LVO, I paired it with, I think, Kalandra. And I ended up really not liking her. I felt that she didn't solve the gunline issues that Doomshaper 2 struggled with. Because there weren't really weapon master spams back then. It was pretty much just gun lines and bricks. And that was just what the meta was for a very long time. So I moved on to Grimm, I tried a bit of Ragnor, and I ultimately settled on Gunbjorn, who ostensibly is probably the best anti-gun line warlock in the troll faction. And so I had Doomy for beating up bricks and Gunbjorn for beating gun lines. And I felt very comfortable playing Doomy generically into everything. That was the question. Can you beat a bunch of really, really fast heavies with Overtake? And then if I felt their answer was yes, then Gunbjorn would probably answer whatever was answering Doomshaper.
Right. So that's God help you if you should ever see both in the same pair. This is actually, I think they died with my old computer, but I put together these graphs as an example back in Mark II that had, like, okay, here's some problem lists. This was back in, like, the days of Lilith 2 and Lich 2 and all these things that would be big problems in the game. And, okay, you can have one list. It was to illustrate, like, having lists that covered really, really deep or covered really, really wide and the importance of overlap. But, like, you could say, okay, this list handles, and this works perfectly for Legion armies at the time of Mark II, this list handles melee, like, close-range, hard-hitting armies, and this army handles, like, high-threat guns, particularly assassination. And you have that coverage, but if you don't have a lot of overlap between the two, you hit Legion, you get Thagrosh 1 with an Ogryn brick, which one list takes on, but it's vulnerable to Lilith 2, and then the other list takes on Lilith 2, but is vulnerable to Thagrosh.
Yeah.
So, like, the... You know, that kind of coverage, I totally get where you're coming from, and I'm not saying you have those weaknesses, not even that those weaknesses exist anymore, but that's something you can get into by thinking, like, directly in the terms of, okay, this is the one weakness, this is just the one thing I need to cover, but the reality is there's diversity in list pairs, so your second list will need to overlap into the functionality of your first list a fair amount to ensure that you don't get blown up in list chicken.
Well, so Gunbjorn did actually dovetail into that
right
towards the later end of the year because infantry swarms became a thing, recursion became a thing, and guess what Gunbjorn has? Explosivo.
Right.
Which you can put on a guided fire Mountain King and charge it into the middle of your opponent's weapon masters. Oh, what's that? Five of your exemplar are dead and can't come back. Oh, what's that? Kill shot? Another five are gone forever? So, I think Gunbjorn excels at infantry swarms and gun lines, which I think are the two things that... Well, and beating recursion, which are all things that Doomshaper doesn't love.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think... Gunbjorn is a little bit more broad than I initially intimated. But he does struggle with extreme armor. So if you have a pair that's extreme armor and, like, so if it was like Anson Durst and Testament, that would be an awful list chicken scenario there. Because
mm-hmm.
one of us is going to have a really, really bad time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, one of you comes out with just like, oh god, how do I win this? See, losing at list selection.
But even then, even in a bad list chicken scenario, you have a 50-50. Just because it was decided at list selection doesn't mean...
Yeah. But, so, I do want to like wind back to something earlier that you'd mentioned, having a list that's a question list, and then... just playing that, getting really familiar with it, and then designing an answer list. This is an area where I've, particularly in metagame evaluation, hit a hard place with Kador. I've got Zirkova 2, who I like a great deal. I'm getting an increasing amount of familiarity with her and feel she plays well into a wide variety of things, mostly because if you don't have a real attrition game, you can just kill their caster in their stupid face. But... I'm looking, like, considering all the problems we've described, shooting resilient weapon masters, fast battle groups, hardcore shooting, and cloud wall control combined arms forces. I'm trying to design that second answer list, and I am constantly coming up short in Kador. Because Zirkova's, like, weaknesses are sustained battles against armored armies, casters who are hard to reach and don't have armies that are vulnerable to low-powered sprays. Or just pitched battles of any kind with someone who's doing massive ranged retaliation. So those are the issues I'm running into. And then, accounting for those four problem areas we discussed earlier, I don't see, like... I have just not seen anything in Kador that can deal with those effectively and have some overlap into what Zirkova does. Like, fast battle groups are a gigantic... Oh, here's one more consideration we didn't talk about, is the scenario packet as part of the metagame. SR-17 has so many scoring geometries, and the scenarios are so live that I think you basically need to be playing theme forces right now to have enough scoring modules in your army.
Yeah, I was actually going to mention that because my Siege 1 list, which I've been using as my counter to Weapon Master spam and to Recursion spam, suffers from... My Siege 1 list is my preferred drop into infantry spam and Recursion because between Explosive O and the volume of firepower and the fact that on his feet turn, I can guarantee any infantry and pretty much any cavalry in the game just dies. It's a huge, just dead counter to those things. The problem is that list is very thin on scoring units. Mm-hmm. And I noticed in the last tournament I was at that I was basically in a position where I couldn't win the game because I didn't have the pieces to do the scoring necessary, and my opponent did. And it was one of those things where I was tearing his army apart, which is great, but I couldn't win the game. I ended up losing on clock. But it was the ability for me to score was basically zero within the scoring geometry. And he had gone up 3 points trivially early on. I managed to have killed enough stuff to stop him from scoring. And I had my stuff sitting and contesting. But it limited my options because I had the stuff and it had to contest or I lost the game. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, but I don't have any extra pieces. And he has all these little dudes running around that are all moments away from winning the game for him if I don't do everything just so. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that's why I kept favoring my Striker 2 list over everything else, because it had enough pieces in it to do all of that and get work done, which makes me either want to take the Siege 2 list and do something completely different with it, which is kind of a bummer because it works really well for its intended purpose, mm-hmm. or just drop Siege and be like, hey, I just got to deal with Recursion in a different manner by maybe overkilling stuff. Because
yeah, or probably Haley 3.
Yeah, well, I mean, Haley 3 for sure. You know, I've been avoiding Haley 2 just because I played so much Haley 2 in my life. I'm just kind of sick of playing her. Not that she's bad, because she's amazing. But really, the answer is going back to Haley 2 for some of these matchups, because she's still the best answer for a lot of things. Because of her control and her scalpel abilities, just lets you manipulate things. But of course, she would also be in a tier. So those are sort of the thoughts that are going through my head. But I really liked how well the Siege 1 list answered the Recursion infantry spam, because it was simply not an issue for me. I would look at it and go, meh, you know, I just flat counter a bunch of different lists that I was seeing. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to have that option, but with the scoring geometry, it's just become less relevant.
Yep. So that's really analogous to a problem I'm experiencing in Kador, is the scenario militates you have to play in theme to have enough pieces, and you need to be taking a force that has redundancy in pieces to not only contest scenario, but score it too. What I'm hitting in Kador is the really harsh limitations of their themes, that Kador has very little access to specialized tools for dealing with Recursion, even if that's starting to fade. Like, it's still a problem for Kador to the extent that it's played at all. And the themes all have a universal speed limit of 10 inches, pretty much. That's mm-hmm. That's a huge issue. That means, like, I can't attrition trade against fast bricks or fast battle groups. And that's something Zerkova's not good on either, if she can't kill the caster. So, like, you know, given this meta discussion, you know, I'm kind of at my wit's end with my faction that constructs a pair that actually deals with this stuff effectively.
One interesting thing is that I just did a couple dips into Kador for our little house machine thing, and I don't think either of my lists were particularly effective, but one thing I noticed is that I just went all in on a lot of infantry, mm-hmm. and then I ended up winning games simply because my opponents didn't necessarily have enough stuff to remove all my scoring options. And that became a big issue because I had to struggle in some cases to keep my caster safe. But if I was playing a very conservative game, and of course my caster didn't need to do anything to the infantry, right? Like, they were doing their own thing. And like in one of the games, I basically spent the whole back half of the game just running away from the threats to my caster.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I was just outscoring them because having traded pieces in a way that allowed me to score more, suddenly with all the scenario geometry, we're of course playing Spread the Net as well, which is the most egregious of those. You just start scoring up, and then it's very hard for your opponent to do much about it if they don't have the piece volume.
Yeah, that's sort of the last place I haven't looked yet or really experimented with is Legion of Steel, specifically Strakov 2.
Yeah, and that's and I was... He had been sitting in a blister for however many months, so I had just broken him out. I'm really rusty on Cawdor, so I'm not going to say he's a top flight caster, but I quite enjoyed what he brought to the table for me.
Right.
And it's interesting because he had the offensive punch with his spell list to really just flip the piece trade in a way that sometimes you don't articulate. I will say that I am constantly disappointed every time I realize that Iron Fangs are defense 12 now. Because for many, many years, they were always a 13, and that was just sort of one of those things that made them a little nice. And now, basically, they just fall over dead 100% of the time.
Right, and now you've got Ben Brain, where you have to look at the cards for your stats. And
well, no, I mean, I finally got around to saying they're 12. But, you know, yeah, that was a little disappointing.
Well, so that's where I'm at with Cawdor, and I see, like, okay, I could make the $200 investment to get Legion of Steel all the way up to 30 standard pikemen, which I'm not opposed to, but, like, you know, looking around at the field over the last couple of months, I'm not seeing anything that gives you really viable options. Like, I wouldn't lump Vlad 1 in the hardcore shooting armies, and I think it underperforms into the ultra-powerful categories we described.
I will say that I was also running the new Iron Fang solo.
Yeah.
And she is pure money in that list.
Well, yeah, she's an exemplar Seneschal, but she's Iron Fang.
I hadn't... Well, especially given that she has both Countercharge and Righteous Vengeance... just puts her in a category I had not expected to get that kind of performance out of. Mm-hmm. I also would say that I would never do the 30 Iron Fangs, to be honest. I don't think going that far into it's that important. I mean, two full units was definitely more than enough, plus Ulans, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel like I wanted another unit, but that was just me.
Okay.
Also, I did something weird, though, because I actually took a, I don't know how weird it is, I took a, whatchamacallit, Conquest. And with the plus two armor spell on the Conquest and a unit of mechanics behind it, it is extraordinarily irritating for your opponent.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so cutting to the Cawdor thing, like, there's a couple of options I haven't investigated, but I think the faction has enough inherent limitations, and its themes are so narrow, and its merc options are so narrow. Legion of Steel doesn't let you take character mercenary units, which is frustrating.
Yeah, and I will say...
I would be all over Vlad 3 if I could get crows in there, but I can't.
Well, I will also say that the lack of magic weapons was... confoundingly frustrating in that list.
No, yeah, Cawdor doesn't have access to specialized tools, so if there's a question list out there that requires specialized tools, odds are in your theme as a Cawdor player, you don't have an answer to it.
Yeah, and that sucks. That's what really hit me, because I know that with Signar, I simply started accounting for the fact that my faction gives me the option to have a lot of magic weapons, but I have to make the point of taking them. But when I start doing that, it all worked out, right? Mm-hmm. With Cawdor, like, there just aren't the choices. You know, minions, they have plenty of options now. I haven't been doing a lot of Legion dip recently, but Legion didn't seem to have any real issues with it either, mm-hmm. at least with the builds I was using. And I really haven't been playing any of the rest of my factions, so I can't say anything.
Yeah. Well, so that's, like, the jumping point I really wanted to get into, because, Mark, I know you're really happy with Trolls, and, Ben, you've still got ADD. But
Trolls
are
great.
I'm at the point where, like, and I think this is a realistic question you have to ask yourself when you're doing meta evaluation and you're designing a pair and you hit the point like, okay, can my pair cover everything? No. Can I construct a pair that can cover everything to a reasonable level of confidence? Maybe not. I'm actually like, I could test Strakov 2 or I could just jump to another faction. Like, I could go Signar for a little while. And it may be appropriate if the metagame is not in a place to support what you've been playing.
So that's actually how I got into Trolls. In the early stages of Mark III pre-themes, I was playing Protectorate. And I would just play Krios. I was a Krios main, because if there's one thing I love, it's top of doing people. And then the themes came out, and you started seeing Forges of War, you started seeing the Convergence theme, and all of a sudden, there were a bunch of bricks that were super resilient to gun lines. And I could not find a functional pair. I tried Krios Amon, and I just thought it wasn't good enough. And so I said, well, out of all the factions I own, which was, at that point, I think, Protectorate, Legion, Trolls, and a little bit of Kador, which of those can actually beat armor? And so I picked up Trolls like a week before LVO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and I think that's a question you have to ask. I got into, a couple of weeks ago, a discussion with some of the Arcane Assist guys about Kador and the place of factions at. I think I've stated more eloquently here my reasons why I'm unhappy with it in the metagame, and I want to come back to what's coming down the pike, because one of those guys mentioned that, you know, okay, Armored Core is going into CID. You know, you got to treat it as a future placeholder. You're playing Future Machine. Like, where will the game be in 4 months? And I think what we talked about in the context of what's coming down the pike, Ghost Fleet being hit, you know, Kolgrimma being tested and then eventually coming out, and this is going to start showing up more as people are wising up. It seems really foolish to me to make your metagame evaluations on the basis of blind hope. While CID has generally made things more powerful, like, you know, betting sight unseen that Kador is going to be in a good place because of Mana Wars, or like any faction, like banking blind on a CID that's going to be tested in several months and then released in maybe 6 or 7 months doesn't seem great.
I would be very surprised to see any of the full model line CIDs to not be viable on launch. The question is, how good are they, and do they actually solve anything for the faction?
Right. And the place Mana Wars are at right now, they don't do any of that.
Well, unless...
unless your problem is winning too much, then they'll fix that for you.
Well, I mean, the only thing I can think of, and again, every time I think about Kador, I think its only issue in my mind, based on the options it has, because it's really strong across the faction, with the exception of the magical weapon issue, right? I mean,
removed from play is another big gaping hole.
Right, but that one, I'm not as fussed about as the just complete lack of the ability to hand out magic weapon, right? Because if Kador had the ability to hand out even just another solo or more options on their casters for handing out magic weapon, I would be less concerned about any of the rest of it. Mm-hmm. But right now, you know, they have great costed jack options for the most part. I mean, everyone has their terrible ones too, but we won't talk about them.
Yeah.
They have a great lineup of infantry. They have a really strong stable of casters. They have a lot of great choices. It's just the bulk of what they have suffers desperately from the lack of being able to hand out magic weapon. You know, I know that seems to be a design thing, but we can also be absolutely clear that nothing the Man of War theme is doing is going to fix that. Unless the weirdly overweight Sorsha is going to come with Spell Piercer or some other universal fix spell, I don't think anything Man of War doing is going to make any difference.
Well, mm-hmm. I think with Ghost Fleet kind of going away, I'm not sure if melee magic weapons are really all that valuable.
Well, no, the problem specifically for Kador in magic weapon is not Blackbane's Ghost Raiders. You can remove them like incidentally or bait incorporeal off them. The problem is the Wraith Engine. The Wraith Engine is a gigantic problem for Kador.
That's fair.
I think actually what is going to grow into more of the issue if Ghost Fleet goes into remission, and if, you know, losing point blank Ghost Fleet is no longer as effective into high armor Kador armies, you're then facing down Dark Host, and you're potentially facing down higher odds of Double Wraith Engine. And Double Wraith Engine is a straight catastrophe. I think
which then leads you into playing Witch 3.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Because if you can triage down one of the two, like you have to be able to build a list that'll beat the Banes in the one Wraith Engine, and you'll just come back to it when the other one's dead.
Yeah. Although I think the magic weapon is still an issue and reflects Kador's problem with specialized tools. Line of sight ignoring is another one that they're generally weak on. But I think the thing that would make the biggest difference for the faction is removing the speed limit. Because the problem is you can take all these jacks and they have great efficiency bodies, but they don't thread above 10 inches. And that gives you massive engagement problems. And your fast opponents can blitz into you hard enough to remove everything.
I've got a solution for you, buddy. Mm. Strike off one. One of my locals, Roman, he was on my I-5 team. He is the Strakov aficionado. Like, it works. Like, yeah. Maybe it's not like a WTC level quality, but like if you want Jax to go fast, like you can beat Doomy 2 speed with him.
Yeah. Well, I think I mean the hard thing is getting engagement on favorable terms, and I think for my money, I mean, yeah, I could look at Strakov 1 again. But for my money, I think the thing that would make the biggest difference for Kador as a faction is allowing Malakov 1 in Jaws of the Wolf. Because that raises your speed limit because you can stack Boundless Charge and Red Line. Like, it gets you over the hump, and it unbenches some of Kador's most potent casters to come out and play and have a real home.
What themes is Malakov allowed in?
Winter Guard Command, that's it.
And that's it.
Yeah, I also think that the Kador themes could be rethought because they don't really seem to help the faction in the way other faction themes do.
No.
Because I know that, like, with the Scorn theme, and granted, Scorn needed a lot of help when they started doing this, the Scorn theme actually adds completely new abilities to some of their units, and the limitations seem very generous. Trolls got the same thing, which is, you know, something they needed. But Kador seems to be in the same boat, yet they have themes that basically make you kind of go, well, I have to take a theme, but hey, wow, this is not really that exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you look at having played a lot of Signar themes, like, you know, the Signar themes don't really penalize me in any way, and they just help me. And you're kind of like, yeah, you know, it'd be nice if the Kador themes were on that same tier.
Well, we're wandering a bit and getting, like, way deep down.
You think?
Yeah, faction problems. Is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about in metagame analysis and building a pair?
I mean, my takeaway advice from all these years of playing it is to always preference lists that you're most comfortable with and go into a game plan, go into each matchup with a game plan that is not necessarily dependent on your opponent, because you have a much better chance of winning if you're just going hard for scenario, know how to run your pieces, and force your opponent to actually beat you than if you're trying to outguess the meta. I mean, you have to take account for certain things, but sometimes your faction and or your options just don't let you cover everything. And especially with the new model lines, there's just no way anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, being a good pilot is always more important than reading the meta well, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think it's really important now because you can suffer really hard from playing outdated stuff. Like, that's something. I think the reason I'm estimating differently is in the past I would really be with you guys, and over the last 9 months I have just been getting blown up by bad meta reads constantly. So that's something that's in my space. But like, I think asking the questions like, what do I see being played around me? What am I playing? What's coming down the pike, both of your local meta and the events you're traveling to, and carrying that forward. And then how do I create effective coverage that I'm happy with? And when do I pull the trigger to jump ship to something else? Because this isn't doing it.
Right.
All right.
Right.
Cool.
Thank you for listening to Dominate for Two. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Got a question or an episode idea? Email us at dominateforTwo.podcast@gmail.com.
There's plenty of ways to shoot those birds off the table.
Stop. Get off. You were fun when you weren't clawing me. No, don't. Oh, my God. Get off. You're no longer welcome.
It's true. I'm laughing at your pain.
Stop. Just go. Bad cat.
You're just
so you don't fucking play her into Signar.